It's time for Cofield and Company.
DJ Thomas to Shane Noel, cross court to Justin Webster. He's open for a three, and he hits it. So the teams exchange threes on each of their first possessions. Trying to get the ball in. They finally get it to Whaley, cutting down the lane for the slam dunk.
Only fitting that the Princeton Tigers get beat with the backdoor cut.
Undefeated this year, and the Rebels are 5.7 seconds away from giving the Tigers their first loss and advancing to a game at home against Boston College. And the Rebels have the win, 84-77. The Rebels come into Princeton, they fly cross country, and they win the game by a final score of 84-77.
Live on the road, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on the road, Westgate. We're hanging out in the theater on this full day of March Madness on a Thursday. Adam Hill is here alongside a good football guest later in the show, some basketball analysis as well from some guests. But it's here, the Madness. We'll go back to last night. You heard the UNLV highlights. We'll get to that in just a couple minutes. But to recap you on the day today, it's been pretty calm. Outside of one, I want to call it a big upset. We can call it that. But games right now, do you have any action on Oregon and South Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I had Oregon to start, and then I foolishly tried to play back and try to middle with South Carolina, and they're not going to get there. So I took a winning bet and made it a even bet.
What do you have South Carolina plus?
5.5.
Oh, boy. 74-61 as they just went the timeout.
Yeah. I guess I'll still win because I had, you know.
You had a little more on the front end.
Yeah, I should have just let it go. Got a little nervous because I've seen couple comebacks today, you know, later in the game. Michigan State was my best play today and started off the day. I and I'm like, all right, cool, up big, and then all of a sudden they gave up the lead and then pulled away again. So it's wild in March, and as you said, not a whole lot of close games yet. We had one kind of down to the wire, but some good performances, and just kind of, I feel like this has happened a couple times the last few years where the early games, like those first eight, not much is happening, and people are like, tournament sucks now. And then all of a sudden it's chaos. So we'll see how that goes. But so far, I think most people, even though there was an 11 over, there's going to be two 11s over six, most people are still perfect on their brackets, I would assume. So it's going pretty well.
What a run in the Reno game. It's in the second half now. 5 minutes left in the first. Dayton was up 25-18.
Yeah.
And since then,
I looked up at
24-5.
I looked up right when it was 25-18. I was like, man, Reno just kind of ran out of gas a little bit here. I think they missed 11 straight shots, and Dayton had a chance to really put some distance, and they didn't. And then all of a sudden, it was all Reno after that. And they're doing a good job against Deron Holmes. He's a really, really good player, but they're making him work very hard for his offense.
Yeah, you know, if you're a Pac fan, and you're getting threes from Trey Coleman, he has gotten better offensively over the years, but he's not a scorer. He's got a couple. Davidson, who's still working on his three ball, he's got a three. So 15 minutes left, and the Pack is up 42-29. I guess we can pretend with our theme that I was going to hit again at 3:30. Yay, Mountain West. And I know you've tried to convince me about the money part of it. That is a nice bonus, but once the tournament starts, if you're a UNLV fan, I guess you do whatever you want, but like, I'm sorry, I did not feel bad for Boise last night. I had him on a future, believe it or not, to win the national title that I bet 2 days after the national title game last year, because I thought they were going to be really good this year, and they were good, but my odds actually weren't any better than I could have gotten before the tournament, and they laid an egg. So we'll get to that in a couple minutes, but coming out of the gates, we mentioned UNLV. Nice game. In the NIT, we, across the board, were like, I think the mom was on the side of UNLV. But you and I were very worried about defensively how the Rebels would do, minus a rim protector and Caleb Boone, and then the guy who kind of does everything on the perimeter and covers really the one, the two, the three, and sometimes the four positions. Luis Rodriguez out, and the Rebels did have trouble defensively in the first half. They got down a little bit, and then they cut it to two at the half, but then the beginning of the second half kind of set the tone.
Yeah, well, it was really the end of the first half. UNLV scored 4 points in the final minute of the first half to cut a six-point deficit to two, and it honestly is then when I said, oh, this game's over. Like, you could kind of sense it. Because one of the things we thought going into yesterday was that the energy and motivation and all those things were going to be on Princeton's side. And I think you saw pretty clearly they were not interested in being there at all. They were like, all right, we'll play offense and we'll shoot.
Set that up, though, like who Princeton was this year.
Yeah,
and what they were last year in the tournament.
Yeah, they were unbelievable. They made a run last year in the NCAA tournament. But this year they were 24-3 going into the Ivy League tournament. They were by far the best team in the league in the regular season, even though Yale was right there with them. And I'm a unapologetic Yale fan. Princeton was a better team, and they handled the conference schedule better. And they were a team that went into Columbia for that four-team tournament over the past weekend, believing that they were absolutely going to roll, and they were a double-digit favorite in the first round game in the Ivy League tournament, and they just laid an egg. They're around 22 points in that game, and I think there was some carryover effect because, they made some threes, and that's what they do. But if you look, no effort to get to the basket whatsoever. I believe 15 of the first 16 shots were threes, which they do that. They take threes, but they'd had you have to work to get to the rim. They weren't going to work, and they certainly weren't working defensively. And after they started missing a couple shots, UNLV kind of took over from there. And you can see, the beginning of the second half, it was all UNLV. They were fairly dominant early in that second half. Princeton made a little bit of a run, made some shots. But UNLV was very into the game, very interested. And you got to give them credit for that. That's tough to go cross-country against a team that, they have a name in Princeton, they're a brand, but they're not a marquee opponent in any way. So good on UNLV for getting excited, getting fired up, going out and playing. And then I think one of the things we left with, we talked to, Derek Jones was his name the other day, the analyst for play-by-play guy for Princeton. And we made a lot of cases for Princeton and then said, they have nobody that can compete with Rob Whaley. Nobody. Like, he is going to be a problem. If he asserts himself and he is interested, he will be a problem. And he was a problem. They could not stop him once he started getting going. And he carried him. Keelan Boone obviously was trying to make up for the loss of his brother. And they were really good. Great game. Great performance. And now they get a home game.
Yeah, Keelan and Whaley were 16 of 21 from the floor. Keelan also threw in a couple of threes. He had a double-double. He's been I won't even say unheralded, maybe overlooked a little bit because of the explosion of DJ Thomas in the second half and especially down the stretch. Keelan Boone has kind of done a little of everything for the Rebels. Bombing from three at times, shooting early in the shot clock, which often, not often. Sometimes you need to do before the defense gets set. Maybe your best shot is at 22 on the shot clock. But the other thing he's done is he's played big. And he's not a gigantic guy. He's 6'8", but, he's slimly built. He had another block yesterday. He's probably around three blocks a game the last five games. So those guys combined for 39. The other big addition, too, was Justin Webster is looking more and more like Justin Webster last year when he shot 46% from three. So he had 15. He had three threes. And as a team, the Rebels went 8-17 from three. So now they got they have a goal in front of them here because they can come back. They can potentially beat Boston College and then it gets fun from there. We'll see where they are, and maybe they can make it a couple of levels in this tournament. But that was a really good win against Princeton.
It was, and I'll say, not only were they missing, Luis Rodriguez and Caleb Boone, two very important pieces, if you would have told me that they would be missing those two guys and have one of the quietest nights of the year and most disappointing nights of the year for Dedaun Thomas Jr., I would have been stunned if you told me they went into Princeton and won. And the first loss of the season for Princeton at home, all those things, it's stunning. But if you tell a team, hey, you have a chance to make a trip to Indianapolis, they're going to get fired up.
It hit me. It's funny. It hit me last night. I'm like, oh, boy. Boy, if they make the semis of the NIT, don't put the cart before the horse. Oh, but
trust me.
Butler and Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Trust me. There's already been a volunteer at the RJ to go cover that game on the road if they're in the semis. believe me, it happened.
DeMond, what'd you think?
I thought it was a terrific performance. I had to watch back the game in a condensed version, but a play that really lets me see what Adam was talking about, maybe Princeton didn't want it as bad, Rob Whaley's skip pass that I don't know if I included it in the open, but Rob Whaley made a great double teams coming, kick out to Keelan Boone, and the closeout from Princeton was not that hard for that three.
Disinterested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for me, watch, it's like, man, UNLV, they had it clicking, they had it going. But now that I see what Adam says, like, oh, maybe Princeton wasn't giving that full 100% effort. But Rob Whaley was fantastic. Him posting up, you could tell that Princeton wanted nothing to do with him. Like, it was a good win. I'm excited.
I want to be clear, though. Like, I'm sure people are like, oh, good. Excuse, like, no, there is something to be said about a team that rallies around each other and a coach that can say, hey, look, I know you're disappointed being – and UNLV, for the NIT is an accomplishment for UNLV. They haven't been in the postseason in forever. For Princeton, it was a very disappointing moment to go there because they thought they were going to be in the NCAA tournament. But for a team to get their team excited to get on a plane and go across country and compete – That's it's not a knock on the other team. What I'm saying is good on UNLV for showing up.
And Derek Jones mentioned it. He didn't know how the house was going to be because he said that they were packing that field house of lately. And you could tell by watching that game that
it was not
filled. The fans, what do they call themselves? Just Tigers? I don't know what the Princeton fan base calls themselves. But they were not there in full support for their team.
You take a little extra pleasure in the fact, Adam, that
of course, I already know.
You thought Mitch
saying,
Henderson
yes.
was rude to you last year?
Mitch Henderson is not the most pleasant person. And if you notice, I will also say I don't want to sell him out, but when we had him on the other day, and we said, you know, maybe some personality.
You're
issues.
Talking about the play-by-play guy?
Yeah, and he was like,
"Oh, really?
I thought so. Yeah,
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he didn't answer, but there was a sound effect.
Well, that might have been like a layered three-question.
I think he was.
Wow.
I think he was reacting.
Backing you up?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
We like Dan Munson, right?
I mean, I do. He's funny. Yeah. He watches Seinfeld. That's good.
Okay. How'd you know that?
His press conference. He dropped it in. And thank you for everyone that sent it to me through social media and through text. Oh, wow. Like, I was watching. I saw it. It was good.
So they were looking like a Cinderella today.
For a little bit.
Yeah.
A couple teams have. Morehead State was very late and then got blown out of the gym. They were.
Long Beach State winds up losing 85-65. So Munson is out, and, you know, the story isn't a higher seed in Arizona taking out Long Beach State. It's Munson and the way this thing went down. And then the weird twist in the story, because if people don't know, he got fired before the Big West tournament here in town, and they went on to win it and get the auto bid. And then Munson was kind of joking about how much media work does he really have to do, like, I'm not paid for this. So and then the AD said what around the time of the game? He said it after the game. What did he say?
The AD was talking to Sports Illustrated before the game and said, you know, hey, just so we know, this is what I was looking for when I made this decision. I was looking for them to rally around that and make a run. He wanted a big pat on the back.
Is this a joke?
Chestnut checkers.
No. He wanted the pat on the back. He wanted the acknowledgement of, hey, good job. Good on you. You didn't really know how to get these guys motivated and fired up.
There's going to be a lot of candidates for that job. That would turn me off.
Me too.
I mean, it's a pretty good job. Most people who are in a position for a job like Long Beach can't be that picky. But I don't love that. I don't love that angle. No. I fired him because I was trying to motivate the guys.
And by the way, like, he also didn't actually fire him, which we haven't really addressed, but his contract was running out and he said, hey, we're not gonna extend your contract. Like, that's, you know, I mean, it's firing, but it's not, you know, it's not like he had 2 years left and he's like, oh, let me fire up these guys. He just said, hey, we're not going to extend your contract, and that's how it's going to be. And now he's going to take credit for motivating the team. That's wild.
And Munson will get a job somewhere else, right? Maybe not a head coaching job right away, but if he wants to work as an assistant, he's 62.
Yeah, he's older. If he wants to, I mean, I'm sure he has enough money saved up if he wants, or if he wants to do, you know, Big West television. I know that's kind of how, you know, when you start really making a lot of jokes on your way out and showing your personality, that's usually, hey, TV.
Yeah.
Hire me.
He's trying out?
Yeah.
All right, so we got Reno leading 46-35 with about 11 minutes left. death's doorstep here for South Carolina, the 6 seed against the 11 Oregon, but we know this is basically an even game coming in. Oregon, a really hot pick because Dana Altman never loses in the first or second round, whatever we want to call this now. 1:48 left. It's an 11-point game. We got more games on the way. We're going to recap some of the or the upset early in the day as BYU is out. But let's do a giveaway right now. 364-1100, 364-1100. We have a five-finger death punch in town with Marilyn Manson in September, MGM Grand Garden Arena. We got tickets available. You can buy them at AXS.com, AXS.com. But we got two tickets right now. Call in, caller 7. DeMond will hook you up. Two tickets, 364-1100.
Probing down the lane. Double clutch shot is good off the window. Low on the left side. He changed direction in midair. Contortionist job by Hall. Gives Michigan State the lead by 7 at the horn in our first game in Charlotte.
Now back to Cofield and Company.
Westwood 1 on the highlights there as Michigan State pulls away from Mississippi State in the second half. 9 over 8. 69-51. We got Oregon by 12, 40 seconds left against South Carolina. And Reno, Nevada, is pulling away from Dayton. It's 56-39 with 8 minutes left. Let's. I think we're going over to Mandalay. I'm not sure if that's where you're stationed right now. I know you got a lot of action going on over there. Terrence Oglesby is with Cofield & Company. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Are you hanging out in the book over there?
I am at the book at Mandalay Bay. So it's loud, so if you have a hard time hearing me, just tell me and I'll try to move.
Now we got you. We got you. All right, well, let's talk about what happened today, which is a lot of chalk so far, but we'll get into some of the chalk victories. But what did you see in the BYU game against a team a lot of people thought was overseeded at 11 in Duquesne?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, there's a lot of guys on Duquesne's team that have played high-major basketball before, whether it's Mahorsey, some of these other guys. They weren't intimidated by the competition. And I think Dede Grant, what he was able to do, be impressive against the BYU team that, quite frankly, guys, looked a little bit slow, in my opinion. And Duquesne made them look that way. So they were physical. I thought they did a nice job on the boards. They competed hard. BYU just didn't have it today. And whenever you guard BYU three ball, that's going to give you a chance to win. BYU only 33% on the day. That bodes well for whoever they're playing against.
One thing I thought was interesting in that game is that, you know, BYU loves to shoot the three, among the leaders in the entire country in three-point attempts. And they got really pushed off the line. Duquesne didn't let them shoot there early. So BYU started to go to the rim a little bit more, but I thought that was just to open up the threes again, and they never went back to that. Like, can you just allow a team to take you out of what you do that easily?
I think so, yes, especially if you're chasing on the outside shoulder and you have the athletes to do that. I was a little bit shocked because, really, if you look at some of their stats throughout the entire course of the season, Jackson Robinson never goes to the free throw line. So what does that tell you? He's not going to be this overly physical guy, even though he's 6'7", 220-something on pounds. He wants to stay out and shoot. So make them play physical, and they weren't physical enough, obviously. And what happens is you put yourself in position to score or position to win. And a big, big win for Coach Dambrot, who's obviously retiring at the end of the season. I thought it was really cool to see that.
How galvanizing can that be for a team when, you know, you're motivated for a coach, you want to play for him, and like he said, hey, these guys just won't let me retire. How long can you carry that and ride that emotion?
I don't have the bracket right in front of me, but I'd be shocked if it goes all that further. I believe they play Illinois in the second round.
They do.
But Illinois is awfully talented. Whenever Dane Danger plays as well as he did today, he's a different kind of player that Duquesne didn't see against BYU, a guy who stays tough off the bounce, really attacks the rim. And then you have all that individual scoring for Illinois. It really changes the game up for them. It's going to be tough for them for that to continue, but this is March, so anything can happen. But Illinois looks really, really good today.
How much of the Morehead State-Illinois game did you get to watch?
I'm sitting in front of them all, but with four screens going at the same time,
oh, I know,
it's a little bit more difficult. But it just seemed like Morehead State was hanging in. And then what ends up happening is Illinois' talent level just kind of catches up to everything. So good, so many good individual scorers. And Marcus Domask, a triple-double. Whenever he's facilitating like that to all these different scorers on that team, it's a really fun basketball to watch.
The reason I asked, and you're right, man, you're learning what we see here all the time, especially during NFL season, where it's like, all right, we got 15 TVs, we're watching all the games, but are we? Like, how much can we actually pay attention to everything that's going on? But the reason I asked about it is because it's very rare. I know it happens, and you probably see it better than we do as somebody who's been out on the floor, but it was so obvious that Morehead State had a lead. They had a 45-43 lead with about 16 minutes left, and they had nothing left. They literally had nothing left despite the fact that they were leading. And I think once Illinois took the lead, that was it. They were just deflated so much mentally. Can you see that? Like, if you're watching a game, can you tell that?
Yeah, a little bit, too. And I think another portion of that was Morehead State, Preston Brown's a really good coach. And what he did was he junked it up just enough to where they would sit their big fella miles inside and be like, hey, you're not coming outside of 8 feet. We're going to make somebody else beat us. And then they put Dane Dage in the game, and he just attacked him off the bounce. And it really seemed to deflate them because it was like their game plan that they thought was going to work was no longer holding firm. And then what ends up happening is when you kind of take the will away from a team and you have so much talent like that, it makes it really difficult. But, I mean, how good was Illinois today? Danny goes for 26. Dane Dage goes for 21. Dane Dage is kind of that swing guy for this Illinois team, in my opinion. He just gives you that extra added element of interior scoring.
Who is the best team that you've seen today so far?
You know what? I'm sitting here looking through the results right now as we're talking. I thought Oregon was really impressive. Jermaine Cousinard going for 40 is obviously huge. In his revenge game, he used to play at South Carolina. He had a little added juice there. In my opinion, though, guys, Arizona, as balanced as they were today, five guys in double figures, Kylan Boswell being aggressive. They have a lot of different weapons. Well, and they're big and physical. Long Beach State hung around just enough to make it interesting for half a second, but by and large, their talent level, their physicality level really stood out to me.
You want to gloat about South Carolina losing?
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm not going to do that at all. Here's the thing. I picked Oregon going into the game. The reason being is it has nothing to do with South Carolina. I think Lamont Harris has done a great job. It had more to do with how Oregon has been playing and the fact that a good percentage of their better players were younger players. Well, now those freshmen are basically sophomore. You're at the end of the season, and now they kind of understand what to stake, how to play the game, how to facilitate within the offense, and they're going to be better, and they caught fire at just the right time. I'm not going to gloat about South Carolina losing. I know those guys. I live in the area. So it's not like I'm happy about it. But at the same time, you have to give credit where credit's due. I thought Oregon was awesome.
No, there's a rivalry, though.
A little bit. Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a rivalry. But, hey, as a media member, I got to play the line, baby. I got to play the line.
Fair enough. There you go. We are right now, you know, we follow UNLV very closely. We're watching Reno leading right now as they move along in the game, and we've had debates like, do you root for the rival because they're in the conference, because they're in the tournament? It's conflicting, I think, for a lot of people. It sounds like, you know, you're willing to accept it. I don't know if it's just because of work or not, but you know, sometimes you just have to accept, hey, we know some of these guys are in the same area, let's cheer for them in the tournament.
You know what? The hard part is it's never been like this up until the last 5 or 6 years where you kind of have to root for guys that are within your league or within your region or whatever. Personally, I think it's crazy, and I think a lot of people agree with me, but it kind of is what it is at this point because of how the shares and all that stuff goes the further you go in the tournament. But how about Nevada? I mean, how good have they looked? We all knew Jared Lucas can score, and this is a flat-out dominant performance. And quite frankly, Nevada's a 10 seed, Dayton's a 7 seed. I would have liked to have seen those seats switch. I thought Nevada was better than a 10, but you know what? I'm not making those decisions. But I think it would have ended up with the same matchup no matter what anyway.
One game I do want to ask you about that's going to be happening tomorrow, number 6 Clemson versus number 11 New Mexico. And you tweeted, my pick Clemson, but this game makes me feel really gross. How scared are you that New Mexico is going to be able to pull off this upset?
Very. I'm very scared, first of all. And one of the main reasons why I picked them is I live in South Carolina. I don't live in Albuquerque, so I don't have to worry about those fans showing up on my doorstep, one. And two, here's the thing. The teams that beat New Mexico are teams with older guards that can score a little bit. I feel like Joe Girard has been a seasoned guy who understands how to play college games. Chase Hunter's been good, not great, but he's still this big physical guard that takes care of the basketball. But there's nobody as fast as Jalen House. What he's able to do on the floor, his impact in total is really awesome to see. It's really awesome to watch. And I'm telling you, that game gives me heartburn as a Clemson alum. But as a Mountain West guy, whoever wins that game, that's who I'll be rooting for.
Another team that I wanted to ask you about when it comes to teams that maybe they're going to make their fan base sweat it out. Kansas, with the injuries that they have, do you think that 13-seed Samford can give them an upset?
You know what? I'm nervous about that game for Kansas because Samford is 10 deep. Plus, that game's being played at altitude. Plus, I don't think that Hunter Dickinson's feeling as healthy as he's giving off. I think he's in a lot of pain. I think it's going to be hard for him. Samford has two guys that I'm worried about. Achor, who's 6'10", 5-man that can step out a little bit, score it. He's an offensive weapon for Samford that I think, to be honest with you, Hunter Dickinson's going to have a hard time defending. Excuse me. And Jermaine Marshall's a beasting 5 or 4-man who's just a junkyard dog in so many ways. I think this is going to be an entertaining game, but I think the fact that Samford goes 10 deep, I think that's more worrisome than anything else, especially playing at altitude.
Terrence, we'll let you get back and watch some games here. Tell people what you got going on later today with the Field of 68 and also the rest of the weekend.
All right. Thank you so much.
And there he is. All right. He didn't hear me. They're doing programming from down at Mandalay.
Yeah.
With a bunch of the experts. So was watching, Randolph Childress here. Is that Dowser? And, John Henson is involved as well. And what's his name? Goodman. There you go.
Wow. Good.
Hanging out in town.
Good.
Well, they
good
know group. They know where to. They know where to go.
Sure.
702-364 is our text number, our text line. If you want to win $2,024, we're doing it every day through March 29th, $2,024. The magic word today, the code word today is Hoover, like the dam, like the president. Hoover.
Two O's.
702-364-1100.
The Colorado Buffaloes have won 25 games for the first time in program history. They beat Boise State 60-53. The Broncos' woes in the NCAA tournament continue. They are 0-10, an all-time record. And it's Colorado dancing on to take on Florida on Friday afternoon in Indianapolis.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I like it. Another Leon team bites the dust. Boy, that one's getting daunting, isn't it? 0-10 as a school. Part of that 0-4 is Leon Rice. Boise with another very good year in the Mountain West Conference. Another very good year in non-con. And just becomes a rock fight. That's their style of play, but they cannot score. And they simply couldn't do it down the stretch last night.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of shots that they missed. That many good looks, and then they forced some that weren't great looks, but whether they were good shots or bad shots, they all seemed to miss. And I don't know if they didn't have their legs or they just kind of felt the pressure of all the losses that they had stacking up on them and knowing that it was about to happen again, but it was not a great performance by any stretch.
Now what? Right? What do you do? You just move on and turn the page, right? I mean, there can't be a push there to fire them.
No. No, but I mean, they've got to figure something out. I don't know. Maybe he wants to leave.
You know, I was thinking that. I think most of his times here are pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's just times like this where, you know, they don't win the Mountain West Conference tournament, which they've always been very competitive in. But especially the NCAA tournament where the Wolves are howling. And it's college basketball fans in all markets are about the same. Wherever you are is not good enough.
Of course.
Right, so you're making the NCAAs every year, but hey, you got to win games, which I'm not saying is unrealistic.
No,
but fans have an idea what their program can always be, not that maybe what it is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to look much further than UNLV, where there was 20 wins every year, and it's like that's not enough.
Yep.
It's like okay.
Rice and Kruger, and people were dissatisfied.
Yeah, yeah, and people forget there was dissatisfaction with Kruger. I mean, he left for a better job, but there was also people like. That were ready for him to leave.
They were not winning games in the NCAA tournament enough.
And they had a Sweet 16 run, and then Dave Rice comes in, he's winning 20 games every year. Like, that, he should be better. And you know, I've argued for a long time that he was a victim of his own expectations because he was recruiting so well. And people said, now you need to win 30 games instead of 20, which he's winning 20.
Well, they were winning 25, but then they dropped down to a couple seasons where they got beat to hell. They got real thin, and, you know, they didn't win 24 and 25. I think it was 25 and 26. The first 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would advise Boise fans, take a breath, cool down. And I think, you know, the demand from here, if you have any right to demand as a fan, you do because you can just not go to the games if you just think, hey, this is not good enough. They do have to get more scores. that does seem to be their issue, especially on the perimeter at guard. Like, Max Rice is a nice player. He can't defend, and he's also very hot and cold. And they took a chance on Roddy Anderson, and he got better offensively throughout the season, but he was not Shaver. And, you know, they had a guy they could throw it down to. I'm not, you know, I can't really rip their roster in terms of inside players because Degenhart and now I'm blanking on the kid's last name, Omar from St. John's, they were very effective scoring inside. But how do you explain last night? Degenhart just was not good.
Man, sometimes,
and Rice is terrible.
Especially when you're a team that relies on a lot of jump shots. Sometimes it'll go.
It's Omar Stanley.
Yeah. It happens sometimes. And, by the way, Reno down to a six-point lead. And
uh-oh,
they've turned the ball over, I think, four of their last six possessions. Haven't made a shot in a while. And now it's probably going to be three.
We'll keep you in tune with the madness. Can't exactly do play-by-play. If you want to hear play-by-play, you can go over to 12:30, the game. But it is 56-53. Oh, boy. Oh, I'm rooting for the Pack. Oh, we need the money. Oh, write them on. Rooting for them. I'm not.
Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
All right, the madness unfolding in front of us here at the Westgate. Nice enough to house the show. Xavier Pope is with us. We're watching Nevada and Dayton go down to the wire. Xavier, what's going on, buddy?
Pretty good. How you doing?
We're good. We're good. You hanging out somewhere watching the games? You watch at home? What are you doing? Or are you not watching the games?
Well, I am not yet watching the game, but I'll get up to it.
All right. What do we got, Adam, in the Nevada game? We're at 61-60 right now.
Yeah, Reno ball. Reno was up 17 with about 5 minutes to go. They're now down one with 35 seconds left. But it is Reno ball coming out of a timeout and 31 seconds to play in the game.
All right. Let's talk a little NBA as we're tracking the games down here. Xavier, I know you, like many other people on the internets, and were kind of wowed by Anthony Edwards. What do you think of the dunk this week where Edwards, who is known as a pretty good player, I think, launched to a new level of stardom?
Yeah, it's amazing at first speed, but when you see that he really didn't touch the rim, it's not as impressive on first sight. I think it's the getting the contact over the player and drawing the foul, which is the excitement of the play.
Xavier, people always draw the comparison to Anthony Edwards because of his look and a bit of his athleticism, is that he is the next Michael Jordan. But I want to play some audio.
What?
That Jazz Chip. Have you not heard the Anthony Edwards-Michael Jordan comparisons?
I'm glad I haven't.
What? That is, like, when people put the side-by-side, like, Anthony Edwards got that dog in him, you've never thought about it. That dunk?
I think, to be fair, DeMond, I'll also say a lot of it has to do with, like, his acting ability and his personality and the fact that he, you know, already started a movie and has that appeal outside or off the court as well.
Michael Jordan actually grabbed the rim and dunked the ball.
I'm all here for the comparison. Anthony Edwards is the next face of the league for an American-born player.
Okay.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk about Jordan because of a story that Jazz Chisholm told about him on The Pivot. For those that haven't heard, this is Jazz Chisholm's Jordan story.
Jordan, just because it's Jordan, you know what I mean? Like, I'm signing to Jordan because 1 year in the Bahamas, he had a little league, he had a softball tournament, a celebrity softball game, right, that he hosted. He was sneaking out of the back. I was one of them fanboys. I had a picture of Michael Jordan. I wanted him to sign it. I go to him, ask him to sign my picture. He tells me, make him want my autograph one day, and walks off. And I got a Jeter signature that day, CC Sabathia, Johnny Damon. I got everybody's signature except Jordan. Jordan tells me, make me want your signature one day, and walks off. I don't even know what that means when I was a kid.
Xavier, you hear that story, and what do you think about number 23, Michael Jordan?
Well, we know notoriously that Michael Jordan, one of his teammates, so it looked like it worked. There he is.
No. I hear that story, and I think that's why LeBron's my GOAT. He would have given the kid an autograph. Jordan is a jerk. He just didn't want to give the kid an autograph. When Jazz Chisholm finally gets to tell him that story in person, he's not going to remember it or anything. LeBron would have given the kid the autograph. That's all I'm saying. That's why he's my GOAT.
I don't think that makes him a GOAT. That has nothing to do with the game of basketball, the amount of championships either player won, the amount of time the teammates they were, and where they played. play the game of basketball and the amount of global domination that the NBA brought to the sports world because of Michael Jordan. So I think that what the on-the-field stuff is where on the court, so that's where the comparison pretty much is and its impact off the court. I think there are a lot of great guys that would sign an autograph for a kid. That doesn't necessarily make them a better player.
I will say, Xavier, that my favorite highlight of the year was that amazing dunk or non-dunk, whatever you want to call it, when there was no rim touch. It was. Until I saw James Harden try to block the shot of a teammate, I still don't know what that was. But James Harden has said, hey, look, we needed something to mix things up. We needed a little bit of excitement, a little change of attitude. That's all I was doing there. What on earth did you see on that play?
Well, but he says that, but they were up 21 in the game.
Like, right.
That's not motivating anyone. If you won the game by 21, up 21 points. I just think that he's just a guy who's just goofing around, and because they were up 21, he could afford to make a silly play like that. I don't think it had anything motivating the team.
It was strange. It was very strange to me. I don't think that's the right way to go about that. But
you kind of showing up to other team, right? You know, to kind of block the old player's only teammate's shot.
It's weird, man. I'll never figure out James Harden. But is that why we've seen him on so many different teams?
I think we see him on different teams because he's just the kind of guy that marches to his own drum. And that's one of those plays that shows he's kind of just a quirky guy. And I mean, that's you see a lot of guys like that throughout the league. Some of them are superstars, some of them are role players. But we've all been interesting, different types of guys in the NBA.
Talking to Xavier Pope, attorney and cultural contributor here on Cofield & Company. Justin Fields, he is now gone. Are you surprised from what the Bears got back in return? Or do you even care at this point as a Bears fan?
Oh, well, I think you have to look at the team. The Steelers have only had very small turnover in their coaching staff and have been a stable team for the last 60 years. And what they've been able to do in flipping Russell Wilson and Justin Fields for practically nothing. And then you see the Chicago Bears pretty much telegraph what they're going to do and then wind up only getting a six-round draft pick for a potential franchise quarterback for a complete unknown and potential Caleb Williams. It shows the difference between the two different franchises, and that's across the league. You see this every time between marquee franchises, and those aren't that great.
So, are you all in for Caleb Williams now?
I'm not necessarily all in. That franchise still has to show that it can move pieces. They've done some good things in the offseason, to be able to put the pieces around Caleb so he can walk in and be successful. Not every player is going to be C.J. Stroud. I think that's unfair to put that on every single quarterback that comes in the National Football League. They're going to walk in and be a stud. Some guys need time to develop, like Justin Fields.
Something that happened last week that I really want to get your take on, because you are one of the smartest guests that we have on the show. With Congress trying to ban TikTok, what does that mean? What does a ban of a social media app look like?
Well, when it comes to a ban, that's in that particular country. We talk about China and that the potential data of 170+ million Americans. Well, China bans and so do other countries ban social media platforms all the time. This is just something that's particularly new to America and how we do things here. I mean, YouTube, all the different things like that have had those different types of bans. And so what it does mean is that Congress is demanding that ByteDance, which owns a significant portion and that has the China tie, sell, and they have a certain amount of time to be able to do that before any actual ban would take place.
And you mentioned that other countries do this too. I guess I didn't think about it along those lines, you know, how certain apps that we have, other people don't get to use those in China. But why is it so much that this Chinese app is so dangerous and not something as Twitter or Facebook that we know that they hacked an election in 2016?
I mean, I think that you have a really great point there, Damon. I mean, Elon Musk, he's openly acting as a chaos agent in terms of his political views, and this is supporting, you know, with the replacement theory related type posts that he shared, and also having politics those who particularly aren't fond of democracy in this country and share hate speech and impacting how our government is. And so this guy's a South African, and he has a massive impact being that sole owner of this company. So, I mean, it may not necessarily represent the interests of a particular country, and I think that's why he's probably seen different than a company like TikTok.
Xavier, I wish you were listening to us at the beginning of the show, because for the open, I did use the X-Men animated series theme song. Are you going to be watching X-Men 97?
You bet I will. That theme song slaps. You know, I am the X-Men. I love the X-Men. And to go after that series, it's an amazing series that I watched when I was younger. And they say it picks up where it left off when we were watching it before. Now, that's the cool part about the series.
Xavier, we are up against it. Sorry it's loud on this end. We appreciate a couple minutes today. We'll check in with you next week, okay?
I love you guys.
There he is.
Love you more.
Xavier Pope out of Chicago. I don't think I could have had much of a conversation with him anyway. I was kind of euphoric at the end of that game.
I could tell.
That is...
I was just thinking about all the money UNLV just lost.
Rough. That is rough.
They lost?
Yes.
Reno.
Up 17 with less than 8 minutes to play.
Completely... did it, and I'm sorry for the folks. Well, they're not on with us yet, so we'll completely flip and lie to their faces. That sucks. They had turnover after turnover when it counted the most. Man, Nick Davis is a good player. He had a ball near the free throw line. He's trying to make a crossover with a defender right in his jock. He turns it over.
Blackshear had one like two possessions earlier, same exact play.
It's always been my issue with Blackshear. As much as he excels, and they did sweep the Rebels this year, but that is his one bugaboo, is that as a big guy, he gets loose with the ball. And he had a turnover, and then they had two threes inside of 6 seconds to try to tie it, right? It was 63-60 at that point,
yeah.
And I didn't see who had the one on the left wing.
Yeah, one was
that? I mean, the one on the rebound came out, and then I think it was Blackshear, air ball.
Yeah.
They wound up giving up a 24-4 run at the end of the game.
Way before those two threes, they had lost it. It was a mess. 17-0 to tie the game, 24-4 over, you know, the 7.5 minutes, whatever it was.
Yes.
And
guess where we are again with the conference. Ready? At Holy Land of Hoops. Headline, Mountain West Conference got 6 bids. Mountain West 1-2 with only a win over Virginia. Sucks! Conference sucks again. Come on. That's how quick it happens.
That's the only
reason. And that's why I said, go on 1 second. That's why I said the other day, and I'm stealing the thoughts of Adam Hill, that don't go crazy over one-game samples. Also, don't judge conferences by the NCAA tournament. There's a large body of work you can judge off of with lots of non-con games. So I'm not going to defend a Mountain West Conference. I mean, last night, Boise fell apart. Game closed 15-4. This one closed 24-4. And, you know, CSU won a game that was tight.
And I love
the night before. Well, it wasn't tight. They blew out Virginia, but, you know, right now they're sitting at 1-2.
I'm not going to enjoy, but next year when I saw a bunch of UNLV fans that are, like, super happy right now about Reno losing, and then next year it's going to be like, you know, just got a little, you know, going to need a little bit more on the recruiting budget. That sucks. Yeah, it does, because you were all happy about this. It's the same people that get excited when their team wins in the NFL a meaningless game and then get upset that they don't have a higher draft pick. Same people.
It's not the same. You can make up for it. There isn't a remedy for a poor draft pick. I guess trading to a better draft pick and giving up capital.
Asking people for more money. That's how you, sure, but you don't need to if you just them win.
I'm never going to be on the side of.
We can't make them be better, okay? But I can be a hater today, okay? That's all I'm saying, Adam. I can't them win games, but I can be a hater and enjoy this.
Tell me that was not enjoyable.
8-2 Colorado State over Texas. Good start.
Oh, boy. All right, more NCAA action. We'll get you updates on the way back. We're hanging out here at the Westgate in the theater.